Hi, you're listening to Bonus Points, the official podcast of Mr. Astle's theology class. Join us as we put out into the deep and explore the world of theology and beyond.
Today, we're talking about the Ember Days and how we can make this tradition part of our lives today. Let's begin. Hello there, and welcome to Bonus Points. On today's episode, we are taking a look at a tradition that was part of Catholic life for many years, that in many places has fallen by the wayside. I'm talking about the Ember Days, these quarterly days of fasting meant to mark the transition between the seasons. We'll start by talking about the importance of fasting in general, and why this is an essential part of any spiritual life. Then we'll trace the history of the Ember Days, from their origin in the early church, until their removal from the universal calendar in the 20th century. Finally, we'll talk about how we can make this tradition part of our lives today. Before we get into any of that, remember to subscribe to Bonus Points wherever you're listening. Depending what app you're listening on, it might say follow instead of subscribe, but it's the same idea. The point is, do whatever you need to do to make sure your app of choice tells you every time a new episode comes out. You can also help this show find new people by sharing it with a friend, by sharing this episode directly, or by sending your loved ones to bonuspointspodcast.com. Okay, so Ember Days. Two things I want to get out of the way first. No, the name Ember Days has nothing to do with fire. Second, even though Ember Days are no longer on the universal calendar, the church has never told us to stop observing them. Even if they're no longer required, they're certainly not forbidden either. When it comes to things like this, I always go back to the parable Jesus told about the wise master who brings out treasures both new and old. Perhaps the Ember Days can be one of those old treasures that you bring out, dust off, and make part of your life. In fact, I think that this particular tradition should be recovered more fully by Catholics today. I think that they're a very convenient way of incorporating two important spiritual practices into your life. I'm talking about marking the seasons and fasting. We talked about the importance of time, marking time and marking the natural seasons back in, I think it was episode 65. It was called It's About Time. But we see that the cycles of time, whether that's days or weeks or months or seasons, are important, right? It's important for us to commemorate them, to mark them, and to find ways of highlighting or emphasizing different elements of the faith at different times. The Ember Days are a way of marking the changing seasons because they fall four times a year around the change in the seasons. You know, I'm blessed to live in a part of the country, part of the world, where we get four very distinct seasons. Each season has its sights and sounds and smells that you just can't replicate the rest of the year. And I think it's important to highlight the spiritual dimension to this as well. Another essential spiritual practice, and one that we're definitely not accustomed to today, is fasting. When fasting is mentioned in the Gospels, it's always assumed that this is something that we are doing. Jesus says that his followers will fast after the bridegroom is taken from them, and that certain demons can only be cast out by prayer and fasting. Not only that, but when Jesus is talking about not making your faith showy, he says when we fast, we should take care of our appearance and not, you know, purposely go around looking gloomy. He doesn't say if you fast, but when you fast. Nowadays, we are only required in the West to fast twice a year, and that is Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. This is a lot less than it used to be, even within the last 100 years. And even the way we fast is more lenient. We are allowed to eat one regular-sized meal and two collations, or two snacks. Usually fasting is also accompanied by abstinence, which means we do not eat meat. Again, this is a lot more lenient than it used to be. We are only required to practice abstinence on Fridays, though outside of Lent, we are permitted to substitute a different penance instead of abstaining from meat. We are also required to abstain from meat on, of course, all Fridays during Lent. No option to switch that one. Good Friday and Ash Wednesday. This is all something, you know, fasting in general, something we're not used to as much as Christians of previous generations. But I think it's still important. Why? Well, for one, because Jesus wants us to. He doesn't even try to encourage us or convince us why it's a good idea. He just assumes, yes, this is going to be something you do. You're going to. They had fasted. There were times of fast under Judaism. And he says, of course, you're going to keep doing that. Part of the reason that it's so valuable is that fasting provides us with opportunities to exercise our self-control. Whether we are fasting from food, which is, you know, the classic, maybe we're fasting from something else, like screens or social media or whatever. Fasting gives us chances to practice saying no to ourselves. This is important because every day we are faced with temptations. We're faced with things we want to do that we know we shouldn't do. And so we need to practice moderating our desires and saying no to ourselves. Think of fasting like conditioning for a sport. You give yourself a chance to practice, to build those muscles so that you have them when you need them. You have the skills you need when you're in a game or a match and you need those skills. Think of it this way. If you can't say no to a snack, what makes you think you'll be able to say no to a sin? And, you know, even that word exercise in Greek, askein, I think askein, that's where we get the word ascetical, which is the word we use when we're talking about fasting and other practices of spiritual discipline. We call them ascetical practices. Ember days are a really great way of incorporating fasting into your life beyond the 2 days a year that it's required. It's a good start, you know, especially if you're not, if you're trying to fast more, but you're not used to it and you're not sure where to start. The Ember days are a great starting point. So where do Ember days come from? Well, we can actually go back to the Old Testament. The prophet Zechariah relays a command from God to fast 4 times per year. Zechariah 8 says, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the fast of the 4th month, and the fast of the 5th, and the fast of the 7th, and the fast of the 10th shall be to the house of Judah seasons of joy and gladness and cheerful feasts. Therefore, love truth and peace." Of course, there were other periods of fasting as well, just as the church has other periods of fasting besides the Ember days. But these 4 in particular correspond with the months of the calendar. And so this practice was adopted into the early church. Like many other Old Testament practices, the logic was that Jesus came not to abolish, but to fulfill. The things that were hinted at in the Old Testament have been realized in the New. And so many of those practices can now take on a new form. We don't know exactly when that adoption happened, though it was certainly very early. A book called the Liber Pontificalis says that Pope Callistus ordered the Church of Rome to fast in June, September, and December. And we know that that decree would have had to happen between 217 and 222 AD. So very early, that's 3rd century. The church is still being persecuted at that time. That's before the Edict of Milan ends persecution in the Roman Empire. However, it's probably older than that, than the mid-200s, early 200s, because Pope St. Leo the Great, writing in the mid-400s, said that fasting on these different seasons goes all the way back to the apostles themselves. At first, there were no fixed days for fasting. Each year, the priests of Rome would announce what days in June, September, and December would be the fast days. By the time of Pope Gregory I, so sometime before 601 when he died, the spring fast was added. So now you have not only June, September, and December, but also one at the end of winter. And then in 1078, Pope Gregory VII and the Roman Synod standardized the dates for the fast. This is really where we kind of lock things in a little bit. They decided that these seasonal fast days, what we would today call the four ember tides, those ember days would be the Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday following. For each one, there would be a specific feast day near the start of each season. So for the start of winter, they took the Feast of St. Lucy on December 13th. So the winter embertide would happen after St. Lucy's feast day on the next Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. For spring, it was the Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday after Ash Wednesday, not actually including Ash Wednesday. This is like the week after. The summer embertide happened after Pentecost, and the autumn embertide would begin after the Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross on September 14th. So for those playing along at home, the four feast days that are the basis for measuring here, for winter, it would be St. Lucy on December 13th. For spring, it is Ash Wednesday. For summer, it is Pentecost, and for fall, it is the Exaltation of the Holy Cross on September 14th, with the Ember Days being the Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday following those four feast days. There was a popular rhyme to remember those four, and if you're trying to remember the four Ember Days, just remember, if we're going to start with spring, the four Ember Tides are Lenti, Penti, Cruci, and Lucy. So Lenti, Penti, Lucy, Cruci, beginning of Lent on Ash Wednesday, Pentecost, the Exaltation of the Cross, and St. Lucy. All right, what about why Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday of all the days of the week? Well, back in the early church, every Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday was a fasting day. Over time, that kind of fell away, but we kept it for the Ember Days. So Wednesday, because that was the day that Jesus was betrayed. You know, even though Judas identifies Jesus in the garden after the Last Supper, Holy Thursday, we've always held Wednesday of Holy Week, Spy Wednesday, was the day that Judas made the deal with the high priest to sell Jesus. So Wednesday, Friday, of course, is the day of the Passion. So it has always been and is now a day of penance. And then that would typically be extended into Saturday, to kind of mark that vigil with Jesus in the tomb. So we recognize that even when Friday's over, that doesn't mean it's Sunday yet. And so Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday became the classic days to fast. These four embertides, in Latin, were referred to as the quator tempora, which means, you know, the quarterly times. We're pretty sure that the term ember days comes from those two words kind of getting smushed together over time. So if you take quater tempora and say it fast and slur it a little bit, you can see where we would get ember from that. But here's a fun fact. This is also where we get tempura shrimp. When Jesuit missionaries first went to Japan, they would make battered fish and shrimp. Usually these were Portuguese missionaries who brought some of their culinary expertise. They would make battered and fried fish and shrimp during the Ember Days because, of course, in addition to fasting, these Ember Tides were also days of abstinence, so they could not eat meat. So there you go, fun fact. Now, originally, the Ember Days were just observed in Rome, but as often happened, liturgical things that were popular in Rome became popular everywhere. We can also see a particular spiritual focus begin to develop. As with all fasting, there's the reminder of the need to moderate our desires, the attraction of pleasures, because we thank God for the good things He's given us, and we don't want to abuse them by overusing them. Not only that, but because each embertide falls at the start of a new season, there's also a focus on the natural world, on thanking God for creation, for this new season, and for a particular product or crop that usually was about to be harvested or was associated with that season. So the winter ember tides became associated with the olive harvest, with olives. The spring ember tides were associated with flowers and bees, and especially, you know, the products we get from bees, like especially beeswax, of course. Summer was the wheat harvest, and fall was the grape harvest. So this means that each of the ember tides also has a liturgical focus. You know, we don't just thank God for olives because olives are fine, if you're the kind of person that thinks that. But olives are also where we get the oils that we use in the sacred liturgy. And so during those ember days, we can thank God for the gift of his holy oils. We also would thank God, you know, for the wax that the beeswax that we get from bees, because that's what provides the candles that we use on the altar. And of course, it goes without saying, without wheat and grapes, we do not have bread and wine that we need for the Eucharist. Ember days were also associated with the priesthood. With most priestly ordinations, when men were ordained as priests, most of the time that happened on Ember Saturdays. In fact, the 1917 Code of Canon Law says that priestly ordinations can only happen on Ember Saturdays, the Saturday before Passion Sunday, or Holy Saturday. Many, many times that meant an Ember Saturday was when men were ordained as priests. So what happened here? Like, how did this go from, you know, a pretty stable tradition for at least 1,000 years, you know, just talking about from when it gets kind of codified, to now where many Catholics, even regular mass-going Catholics, have never heard of this? Well, I think the first step, at least in the U.S., was in 1949. In 1949, the United States got permission to substitute mitigated abstinence on Ember Wednesdays and Saturdays, meaning that on Wednesdays and Saturdays of the Ember Tides, you had to abstain from meat, but not entirely. You could eat meat at one meal of the day. Whatever your main meal was, you could have meat at it. And eventually that kind of spread to the whole church. The big change was in 1966 with Pope Paul issues Penitentiae, which was a document on the penitential life of the church. It's most well known because this was the document that said that we are permitted to substitute other penances instead of abstinence from meat on Fridays outside of Lent. So nowadays, a lot of us think, we don't eat meat on Fridays during Lent. And that's true. Those are the times when we are required to abstain from meat. But kind of the default practice of the church is still, you should be abstaining from meat every Friday. But this document from 1966 does give us permission, if it's not Lent, you can do some other form of penance instead. You can commute your penance. A lot of people forget that part. They know about the I'm allowed to eat meat part. They forget the other penance part. For our purposes, the other thing that Penitentiae did was it removed the obligation to fast on Ember Days. It never said that it was bad. It never said not to do it. All it said was there is no longer an obligation to practice fasting and abstinence on the Ember Days. And then, of course, when you get to the new calendar in 1970, the Ember Days are no longer on it. Again, they were never suppressed. The Modern Missal mentions them. In the section on the calendar, we do hear a reference to, and I quote, "the four times in which the Church is accustomed to pray to our Lord for the various needs of men, especially for the fruits of the earth and human labors, and to give public thanks." So we do kind of get a reference to the Ember Days, but they're no longer required. They're not on the universal calendar. In context, it's just kind of an encouragement to different bishops' conferences to say, hey, you should consider adding some fast days for the people in your area and consider these four times. So it's no longer strictly required or not strictly required. But again, it was never suppressed. We were never told not to. And it seems like it's still approved. So what do we do with this? How can we practice the Ember Days? Well, first of all, we can fast. The classic, right? Fast and abstinence. Fasting from food or perhaps fasting from something else. We can think of each of the Ember Tides as like a mini Lent. Right, we have this season of Lent where we really focus on penance and fasting and almsgiving and prayer, like all these good things. But sometimes that may get neglected the rest of the year. So the Ember Days are a good time to, treat those 3 days like a mini Lent. Give something up, whether that's food or otherwise. When you do eat, so maybe that Thursday of Ember Tides, you can also do something that incorporates whatever natural product we associate with that time, a way of giving thanks to God for the new harvest, for the new season, for the liturgy. So make something that incorporates olives around that winter embertide. I don't suggest eating flowers or beeswax, but maybe that spring embertide is a good time to make something with extra honey in it, or to decorate your house with some fresh flowers, especially because it's the turn of spring. We need some flowers after winter. Of course, the summer embertide, wheat, you know, go all out with the bread, with your baking. And then that fall embertide, the grape harvest. If you are of age, I mean, I think God gives us wine to cheer man's heart. That's in the Bible. But I know many of you listening are not of legal drinking age, so I don't know. Go have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something. And of course, one of the most important things we can do during the Ember Days is pray for our priests, pray for vocations, pray that the Lord sends us good and holy priests. Even though it is no longer required that ordinations happen on Ember Days, there is still that connection with the liturgical life of the church and with the priesthood. So while you're doing your baking or you're picking those flowers for the vase on the table, maybe say a few prayers for your priest, for your pastor, and also for all the priests of the world. So that's really all I have for you today. As always, you can check out bonuspointspodcast.com for more resources. Today, if you were to go there, you would find an article from 1 Peter 5 that traces the history of the Ember Days. You'll find the article about Ember Days from the Catholic Encyclopedia, which is neat because the Catholic Encyclopedia was written in the early 20th century while Ember Days were still an obligation, so it speaks about them in the present tense. I'll have a link to an article from the Catholic Gentleman about how to practice the Ember Days today. It also includes some really good prayers to keep in mind if you're going to practice the Ember Days. I'll have a link to the 1917 Code of Canon Law, which talked about the dates for ordinations, and Pope Paul's Penitimini, which we mentioned towards the end there. Until next time, I'm Mr. Astell. Thank you for joining us once again as we continue every episode to put out into the deep, to explore the world of theology and beyond.